You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Westwave Audio, LA's new API dealer. And now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hi, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and this is our very first podcast. The Audio Nowcast is a place where industry professionals, yes, we get paid to do some of this stuff, gather around the table and talk about the issues that affect the audio industry. Let me introduce you to the group that we've got here today. Over here to my right is Martin Page.
How you doing, Mikey?
Scott Gershon.
Yeah, hello.
Bobby Summerfield.
Hello, hello, hello.
And last but not least, Rob Arbiter.
Pleasure to be here.
That still makes sense.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and apparently in a prior life, I was a librarian. Because that was our very first intro to our very first show. And the amazing thing is, all those guys are still here. This is show 132. This is our 7-year anniversary show.
Yay!
And before we get going, let me introduce the guys again. Over here on my right, we've got the one and only Martin Page. Martin.
With a much more deeper and older and mature voice.
And next to him, we've got Bobby Summerfield.
Oh, I haven't changed. I'm just the same.
Same tight pants.
And we've got one of the most fantastic additions that we have done to the Audio Nowcast. Right next to, across the table from Bobby Summerfield, we've got Bobby Osinski. Bobby!
Hi, guys. But I came in, what, 92, right?
Yeah. You came in on show 2, see. But actually, I don't remember what show you came in.
92, I think it was.
But it was, I think it was show 92.
Yep. He's the youthful member of
that's
the
right.
team.
Yeah.
You know,
good
that's
to youthful sometime.
That's when the stats started going up. So.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then finally, last but not least, the one, the only, the Iron Man, Mr. I have not missed a podcast yet, Rob Arbiter.
I haven't actually left the studio since we started doing this. I've been Skyping in from the basement.
Guys, it's our 7-year anniversary. We've done this show for 7 years.
That's hard to believe. Do we get the 7-year itch, do we?
I had it at 3 years.
We started in 2006 and in true Audio Nowcast forum. We recorded our first show in April, but I didn't post it.
And not
May.
not in this building, though, right? Where were you started? Oh, it was downstairs.
Yeah, it was downstairs. Different studio, whole different setup. It was different. Hey, we're going to talk a little bit about that on the back end because there's some really great stuff that I want to cover about what's happened in the 6 years and what we're doing and answer some questions and things like that. So that's all going to come out on the back end. And we also have got some fantastic, amazing giveaways. I mean, we are not good at giving away stuff, but we're getting better. And the giveaways that we have for this podcast are phenomenal. And we'll talk about that in the back half. But first, I want to talk about some stuff that's kind of relevant to what's happening now in audio and what's happening actually in tech. And this is really came to my mind because I had surgery, as some of you know.
On your ears?
And, yeah, as a matter of fact. I had surgery and I had some downtime. And for me, I don't have
a... He removed his ears. He's an A&R man now.
That was a good one. You know, it only took 7 years. but I had some downtime.
I was going to be getting signed recently.
And so I started reading... You know, I was on the internet and I was reading like gear slats and reading some of the different boards that are out there. And I noticed the trend that they're really – I wanted to talk about. And that's the whole fanboyism. That's the fact that people seem to be just really – finding their self-worth in their gear, because that's the only thing I can think about why they're so hardcore in the fanboyism. And I'll give you a good example. I recently switched from an iPhone to an Android, and I have a couple friends that are just hardcore iPhone guys. And you would have thought I broke into their house and killed their kittens.
Well,
I
mean, well, it's such a betrayal, of course. Yes. Yes.
Exactly.
And but I'm like, did kill the kittens.
It's a whole different podcast.
He beat them with an iPhone.
But then it all kind of happened at the same time, you know, because I was talking to them on the phone and stuff. And I was just – I'm just amazed at this whole fanboyism. And by that, I mean, you know, people that latch on to a company or a product or an operating system and feel like they have to defend it and feel like they have this need of I can only think of finding their self-worth.
Well, that's part of it. But a lot of times, because I've thought about this for a long time, a lot of times no one wants to be thought of as having made a bad decision.
Well, exactly.
So like if you're defending the kind of stereo you have or the kind of phone or whatever, if that thing doesn't turn out to be the coolest thing, then you made a bad buying decision. So
right.
It's not so much that your worth is wrapped up in that product. It's just no one wants to be seen as having
it's
made a mistake.
Very much the same with having a wife, isn't it, really?
Having a wife.
You've got to say, I know she's the best. I mean, you've got to accept
it. No, you don't. You absolutely don't.
No, but the thing about it is you're absolutely right in the bad decisions, but I think there's a little bit of – you know, they feel a personal attack on this. And I think they can only feel that way if they don't have – if this product doesn't somehow elevate who they think they are. And for instance, like when I went to Android over the iPhone, and I know I'm going to get emails from people because whenever I talk about stuff –
You might
like
not
this,
get
so
out of this building alive.
Exactly. Yeah. But right now, you know, Android is just a better phone operating system than the iOS. It's just – allows for the customization, and it allows for the information that you need. Now, granted, there's – you know, iOS still has some great stuff. You know, the apps are vetted a lot better in the iTunes store. There's not a lot of crap. But, you know, the Play Store has – it's just as good, if not a little better how it's organized.
So in this situation, bigger is better.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is bigger. It is bigger.
But I just kind of wanted to open it up, guys, and I wanted to discuss a little bit about, you know, it happens more so than just phones. If you look at Pro Tools, Pro Tools is a really big, you know, a really good example of this. Pro Tools 11 comes out, and some people
it's
are crashing it.
Oh,
exactly. But then other people, you know, have really logical, you know, criticisms of it, and they just get blasted on some of these boards about not using it yet and about blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, man, you know, if there's one thing that I've learned in these last 7 years of doing these podcasts is trends change, companies change, things you cannot get locked in. The guys that got locked into whatever it is, guess what? They're not working in audio anymore because you get left behind. As soon as you plug in and you get stuck, then you're going to get passed by. And I just wanted to open it up to you guys. I mean, why do you think there's this fanboys? I mean, Bobby, what drives this? And how can – I don't know. How can you stop it, or can you stop it? I mean, while he's thinking, Rob, do you have any –
It's like religion. People, I mean, all around the world decide, there you go, opening a can of worms. But it's the same sort of thing.
You know what else, though? In the old days, when we all like were earlier in our careers, a lot of the toys were so incredibly expensive that you were sort of betting the farm that they were going to be your livelihood. I mean, if you bought a Synclavier or a Fairlight or, you know, Sony 48 Digital or some of these things that were – multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars, you had to be a fanboy because you had to get the work to come in to justify buying all this stuff. And so it used to be that there was a reason, or at least a better reason, to be trying to promote the gear.
Right.
I mean, now everything is just a tool. I mean, Pro Tools is the most expensive tool, which is hilarious because in those old days it was always the inexpensive tool.
Right.
But it's an order of magnitude cheaper than the expensive toys used to be. So I think now – I mean, I think it's basically no one wants to be seen as using the wrong stuff. You know, to me personally, if I'm interchanging with other studios, I don't care what they use. As long as I can give it to them in the format I'm comfortable with, they'll give it back to me in a format I'm comfortable with, and they get the work done.
Right.
I don't really care what they use.
Right.
And because it really doesn't matter.
I deliberately try to work on different stuff. I mean, I use Nuendo. I prefer to use Nuendo because I'm better at it than any other program. But I use Pro Tools when I have to. I love Ableton Live. I absolutely love it. I've got the little controller and I do tracks in it sometimes. Sometimes I do a track in...
It's Ableton. It's not Ableton.
It's Ableton. I thought we had settled that. I thought we had settled that.
We did. Just a little Audio Now cast humor there.
Yeah. You use whatever you want to do. I mean, sure, we will have our preferences. Yeah. I think talking why people, I think it's the psychology behind they all want to be right. And that, you know, exactly as you say, well, they want to make sure they've made the right decision. They want affirmation.
I just want to give people permission to be wrong. You know, you can like a piece of gear and things can change and then you can put that gear to the side and still have it and still own it and still love it and try something else. Oh, yeah. I mean,
well, that's fine for some gear, but like if you buy a console, like you're outfitting a studio and you buy a giant SSL or something and you're investing hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, that's pretty much your tool at this point.
Yes, but having said that, if you buy a console now and you're investing that much money, I guarantee you if the console is still around, it's because they're good. It may sound different than a Neve sounds different than an API, sounds different than SSL, but you can't – there's not a bad decision in there. You can't go wrong with any of this.
Well, depending who you talk to, I would think.
I posted on – I think it's Gear Sluts.
It was just Sluts, I think.
It was just Sluts, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I post on there a lot.
Nothing to do with music. Nothing at all. Totally different podcast.
And then we were just debating what we use. And they said, no, we don't use that one. The battery's run out.
Sorry.
It was on, I think it was like, I can't remember, Pro Sound. Anyway, right. And I posted a thing about a VR. And I said, I've got this mod. Does anybody's welcome to have sharing this heat reduction mod I've done for VRs?
Right.
And this guy, his name's Fletcher. And you know him, right? And he's, bless him dearly, but he's like, he ripped me off like a whole paragraph, eloquently, you know, bitter, unfortunately, about why would you want to use a Neve and this and that.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. I'm like, and I replied to him, I said, well, it's obvious you haven't used it, but whatever. You know, I was very polite to him, but I was like, why waste your energy doing it?
I
often say, I think the answer is to the question, why are people like that? I say, just get a life and.
You see it in music, though. I mean, we're talking about it now, but you know, you'll have people say this band is better than that band, and you can see it on YouTube how they rave at each other, you know, and they pick something and they become dedicated to it, and it's a sign of boredom. It's a great sign of boredom.
And it's a sign of sense having to be with. Being as a human
and be
trait.
Important, yeah, and to seem that they've got something to say. But you can see it in every, you know, you could, for instance, you know, you can look at the recent blues concert, Crossroads, that Eric Clapton does, you know, and you can see on YouTube all the different performances, and you can just see the fans, you know, saying he shouldn't have been here, he shouldn't have, he's not a real guitarist, why is he playing, you know, and you can just see this kind of, as Bobby said, need to be heard. And nowadays, you know, you can be heard because of YouTube and as you were reading, you know, on the internet. But I don't think it's anything, you know, anything just for gear. I think it's for everything.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, you make a really great point. And one of the reasons why I wanted to bring it up, especially on this podcast on the 7-year anniversary, is because one thing that I've noticed about most of the guys – on the podcast and most successful people that I know who work in audio is they're not a slave to anything in particular. I mean, they're not afraid to try different things. They're not afraid. I mean,
Bobby's a slave to that Sluts program.
I am, yes.
He's on that daily.
But yeah. I'll give you a great example of a guy sitting around here. Martin has a fantastic approach to buying instruments because I've gone over to his studio.
He goes in the shop and says,
I'll have two. But like when you buy guitars and when you buy different things, he plays it and he likes it. And if he wants to get a Baby Taylor guitar, right, because he likes that, he's not, you know, hooked on that more so than a Gibson or more so than anything else. It's just – it's really smart decisions. And I've noticed that about you, Martin.
Thank you.
Even when you buy keyboards and stuff like that, especially when you do it without me,
I think what we were talking about earlier, though, the era that we came through, you know, when we did buy our gear, it was gear that's still in my studio now. You know, the Massenburg stuff, the Neve stuff, and the preamps and the microphones. You sort of, if you're dedicated to it through our period, you sort of said these are the this is the equipment that is going to last all the time, yeah. You know. So, and you get lots of feedback from people that you're working with.
So I'm actually,
I'm actually using stuff that most of the stuff, you know, except for Pro Tools, the stuff that I had, you know, right back in the 80s, you know.
Well, and I've been to like Bobby's studio.
Yeah.
Bobby has a great, you know, collection of different synths and different mm-hmm. things. And then Rob, you know, you try everything that's out there. And I know, Bobby, I haven't been to your studio, but I know the way you talk, you're really open-minded. And I just wanted to show you that, you know, that's a common trait about people who are working and thriving in this industry is I don't think they get caught up in that fanboyism. You know, they may have their preferences, and Rob will never like Logic. But besides that,
yeah, but it's based on learning it and using it. It's not just because I use something else.
And that's the one point that I wish I could write on all these blogs. It's like, look, guys, you know, have an open mind. You got to try other things. You know, I'm hugely pro API. We're sponsored by API. I have a ton of API gear, but at the same time, you know, if an API piece of gear isn't right for a particular thing, I have no problem trying that out. And you just have to have that kind of flexibility, especially in today's recording mm-hmm. world and things of that nature. Okay, so moving on to that, I wanted to get to a couple quick questions that have been around since like last year.
quick question.
We've only done four shows. I haven't had a place to put this, but but one of them I thought was pretty appropriate. You know, on this podcast, we talk a lot about technique and we talk a lot about gear and things like that. And every once in a while, I get a question that has nothing to do with gear, but has to do
recipes
with personality. And we actually got a question on our podcast about what approach do we take if a VO artist or vocalist isn't performing well in the booth or in the session? And they said basically it was a paragraph long and I won't read the whole thing, but, you know, are we supportive? Do we go, hey, it's great, let's try it this way? Or are we honest and say, hey, you're a little flat or you're not doing this right or the read's wrong? And so I wanted to answer this question because Francis asked this a long time ago and I've always wanted to do this. And I thought, I can't get past the seventh year.
Yeah, let me jump in here. I think any musician, any creative person wants to hear what they're doing wrong. If they're not performing correctly, they want to know what it is. If they're not performing the way the artist wants, the way the producer wants, they want. I can't say it's criticism. What they want is direction.
Yeah, like feedback.
They want feedback, and the more you can give them, the better. And they don't take it as criticism. That's the whole thing. A pro wants that, and again, here's the when you work with a band, everybody tends to be very defensive. But yet, when you work with studio musicians who do it all the time, they come in, hey, whatever you want, let me know. You want to do that? I never tried it before. Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. And it's a completely different attitude. So pros, they don't take anything as criticism. They take it as direction. And that's the big difference, I think.
What about you, Martin? When you've written with people, how do you handle that? Because you've written probably with some pretty big egos out there, and you've probably heard something where you've like
– I agree with what Bobby said, but it's a very psychological thing to me because I sing as well. So I know the emotions you have to go through and that, you know, you want your producer to – allow a kind of air that is good between the performer and the recording. You know, I have found that if you make it too mathematical, as we did when we were in the young days, you know, it doesn't flow so well. And if, when I started to work with real pros, like Bobby said, you know, Maurice White, and you'd see how they would. I mean, Maurice, in the end, he trusted me and my partner. Brian sitting behind the board while he did vocals, and then I worked with Bernie Taupin, who wasn't really a vocalist, and you learn, I think, to be, as a producer, the partner of the guy who's singing. It's really emotional thing to sing. It's probably the hardest thing to do. You know, you've got to put some emotion into a track. I worked with Tom Jones and Elton John, and they come, as Bobby said again, they come very professional. But Tom Jones would say, what do you want me to do different? You know, do you want vibrato or don't you want vibrato? They do want feedback. But I've found that sometimes, I think everybody knows this, everybody will agree to this, that you know you can't push too far. Suddenly the vocalist has lost it. And you don't push past that point. You just, you have to read it as a producer and say it's not happening. We're gonna stop for a while.
Right.
I think there's a really, really skillful place in stopping to allow a vocalist to rethink, get inspired again.
Right.
And because I'm a singer myself, I go through the same thing at home all the time. You know, recording my own stuff. It's like I can sing a song for a whole day and then go, that wasn't right. I need to come back tomorrow with a different spirit. It's very psychological and emotional to do a vocal. Vocals are human.
Right.
You know, it's a human thing. So I don't think you should give feedback, but I don't think you should tear somebody to shreds about it, you know, unless you think psychologically this will do them the world of good. I'm sure there's, but most artists I've worked with, they just want to feel like you're a partner of them,
right.
You know.
Have you ever seen it work where really deep criticism, negative criticism has worked?
Yeah, once it worked to me when I worked with somebody who drank too much and they came to the studio topped up and I had to sort of really say, this is a waste of time, you know, and you're letting everybody down in the studio, and it worked. That person took it badly and then the next day came back sober. But there are some times when you just have to go, this is a waste of time.
It separates the boys from the girls, or boys from the men. I mean, a more experienced or a really good producer will get the best out of the singer. And if we're talking about singing, right. The person said VO as well, but artistic
or guitar player, anything, really.
But certainly with the voice, it's and I'm sure we've all done this. I've had singers that have just frozen up. I've had singers say, "I'm in the wrong clothes. I feel depressed." I was speaking about this today, and it's nearly funny, but you can't laugh at it because it's a very sensitive spot, very very intimate space you get with the singers.
Right.
And lots of times I've found, it really helps to make them feel comfortable, loved, and no pressure, and say, let's do it again. That was brilliant. If you have to do it again. And a very important thing, certainly with singing, is to trick them into singing again.
Yeah.
Don't always have the big glaring red light on, have the lights all blown up in the studio. Have it nicely dumbed down. Put them a nice glass of red wine.
Yep.
Give them a vibe going on. And sort of like, by the way, even go and sing with them and say, okay, you sing. Oh, no, sing along with them. And
always point out the good things. You know, when they do something, really point it out, and then it'll lift their confidence. It's just like anything else in life. And also a good thing is sometimes to bring them through after a couple of performances. And sit down with them and listen to them and say, what do you think?
Yeah.
You know, and then really get them, you know, involved in opening up and making a decision about their own vocals. It's always nice when the singer says, I can do better than that. You know, then you know you've won them over.
Yeah. Rob?
I was just going to say, there are a few things more frustrating as a producer when the singer gets on the mic and you realize from note one, you're not going to get it.
Yeah.
And no matter what you do, you're not going to get it. There's nothing you could do. I mean, often you still go through the motions and you try different things, but
you're reaching for the Rolodex at the same time.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, or you go, oh my God, we've recorded this in the wrong key. That's terrifying.
That is terrifying.
But you know, Rob, you bring a great point. I direct a lot of VO sessions, and as when I go into directing mode, you kind of have to know the latitude of the person that's in the booth, and then you have to manage what your expectations are.
Psychological.
And I can usually pick that up really quick. Once they start reading and you ask them maybe to do a couple little things, and I'll just know where they can go, and you can't squeeze, you know, blood out of a turnip. It's just not going to happen. So what you're saying is really correct, is the fact you usually put yourself in a position where at least you know what you're going to get, know what you're going to
The one that kills me too is you have the singer out there and you try different things, or a VO person actually, and no matter what direction you give, they just keep doing it the exact same way. And then you just want to go out and wring their neck.
You know, and the thing is, that's so funny you say that, because you get the same thing over and over again, and yet they think they're doing it so differently.
Right, because they have a different look on their face or something. But what's coming out of their voice hole is just not different.
Now, on the total opposite end is when you work with uber talent that's so good, they're only going to give it to you a certain
couple
way.
Tones,
and I'll tell you, a good example is I worked with the late, great Don LaFontaine, who was the voice of all the movies. You know what? When Don comes in for a session, when he came in for a session, Don does it Don's way, because that's what you're hiring. That's why you hired Don. You want that voice. And he came in and did seven takes and left. And He was really nice about it. He's like, yeah. you know, the producer was there and talking and everything, but he just went, just rattled them off.
In a
and
world.
Then said, and then in said, okay, well, I think we got it.
Yeah. It's like, I hope we got it because he just left.
Exactly.
you know, sometimes you can be working with such a good vocalist and you say, should we do it one more time? And you see their faces, you go, we've got to keep the first four. They won't do it past a certain point.
But, you know, also, though, in their defense, I've worked with producers who, you know, will get a great take and won't know that it's a great take.
Sure. Yeah.
And everybody all know it's a great take. The artist will know it's a great take. Yeah. Everybody knows it's a great take. And then you hear, all right, let's do it one more time from the top, just, you know, as a safety. And you're like, we just spent 2 hours doing, you know, 37 takes, and you want to do one more safety. Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of works. It works both ways. But
yeah, that's the funny part. When you know you got that take, I've always said, okay, let's do one more, see if we can beat it. Yeah. And I've never had anybody beat it, ever.
It's sometimes nice for a backup, though, if you want to double.
Well, if you want to double,
put it in the pod.
Yeah, and you know what? And it depends on how long it is. If it's a 30-second commercial, then we're gonna do that. We're gonna take it. We're gonna get the good one, and we'll get like three more. As a matter of fact, I have one producer that I work with on a lot of national branded stuff. That the good takes don't start until like 30. He like the first 10 are just warming up. It's just like we're just gonna warm that person up, and then he'll do the next, you know, 15 or so is just finding the latitude. And then right when he gets one that he loves, it's like, okay, this is great. Then he'll give total different direction and we'll pick it up again. And
well, the thing is, once as a producer, once you can say you have one that you like, a lot of times the talent will then relax.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
It's interesting seeing some artists would choose, you know, a producer that they knew they could work with vocally, you know, for feedback. And then there were artists that would just pick an engineer to work with because they knew what they wanted to sing and they just wanted the engineer to get it down and to, you know, keep control of the whole session. So I think it's a real mixture on how the artist is. Yeah. You know, you look at someone like Sting and he'll take Padgham for a long period just because it's not necessary so much feedback. But then you'll get Michael Jackson with Quincy Jones and you know there's a rapport going on between the two. So it's a real teamwork kind of thing for me.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, a nice trick, I'm sure everybody's done something similar to this, but sometimes when a singer's not quite getting it for whatever reason, I often have a SM7 or a SM58, a handheld dynamic microphone in the control room, and I'll say, come in here and check this out. And they would come in and listen to it, and they'd most probably get it. I'll say, let's sing it again. Sing it on this mic. And I'd stick it up there, and they'd sing it loud with the monitors coming back. And they'd get more of a live vibe, and they get a bit more of an adrenaline
there's
going.
Not that boundary before, but by the glass. Exactly. So you're sat in the front.
Because you go in there, and it's a little cool. It shouldn't be cold.
Separated.
They start performing.
Yeah, then they start to feel.
And they loosen up.
They don't actually think
they're really doing it.
No.
And then they get good.
And then I'll say, let me switch the monitors off. Put your headphones on. Let's just see what it sounds like. And I'd record it.
There you go.
You know what I must point out?
Trick him into it.
While we've been sitting here talking,
somebody broke in.
I thought I heard scurrying, and I just heard a
rats,
voice.
Rats in here? Oh.
Hello.
And who would that be?
The noisy Jeremy, ghost. I believe Scott Gershon is here, Jeremy.
Whoa!
Just so you can turn his mic on.
Hello.
There we go.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Scott.
Mr. Scott.
Scott Gershon.
Gershon.
We should note.
Hey, but you know, one of the last things I want to talk about, and then we're going to take a break. Scott comes on, and then we take a break.
Oh, thank you.
But
I came for the cookies.
I'll tell you what: if you're an engineer, if you learn how to work with the talent and how to work with the producers, you're gonna really be able to make a name for yourself, and you're gonna be in demand because you know your place. Okay, like when I'm recording VO. I don't give my opinion unless I'm asked. And then when I do give my opinion, I always make sure it's always going to move the project forward the way I think the producer wants it. It's really – you don't give your opinion – I don't give my opinion too much because we're not here for me. We're here for that person who's sitting behind me in the producer's chair. But I just wanted to give that little bit of tip, you know, to the people that are out there because that's the kind of stuff that's going to directly affect your employment. You know, if people like working with you, if you can put talent at ease, if you can work with the big guys and the first timers, you're gonna have a job and you're gonna have some legs in this business. And
that's a very good point. You want people like to get on with people, so
yeah,
you know, it's a huge point. You've got to be able to have a relationship and people to like you. I mean, that was one of the first things I found when I came to the studios, was you wanted to be liked. I mean, nobody wants to go in the studio with nobody who's, right, who's going to be, you know, depressed, unhappy and not vibing. So right, it's a lot to do with character.
Completely.
There's a lot of guys that can do the job in that chair that you're sitting in or the chair that you want to. So if you want to differentiate yourself,
it's easy
7 years, I'm learning how to speak. But, you know, one way is on a personal level and learn how to direct and learn how to take directions, and that'll really take you.
And learn when not to say anything if you're the engineer.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes.
That's the thing. Yeah.
When to back down.
As an engineer, you know, when I'm in engineer mode, because some sessions, you know, they want me to direct, but other sessions, they're totally going to take control. Yep. I keep my mouth shut. I literally, other than just, you know, giving the take numbers and guiding the session, okay, stand by, okay, we're rolling, stuff like that.
And when
I just keep my mouth shut because they're talking, and you just don't want to have a lot of voices in the headphones.
And please don't tap your feet or the console. I love them dearly, but lots of guys are like, the band starts playing, you're cutting drums, like, okay, here we go, let's take it down. And he's grooving around, the guy's going.
You know, we could do a whole show on engineers' do's and don'ts, yeah, really, because that's a whole nother, you know, a whole nother, that's actually not a bad idea. But, all right, well, I'll tell you what, we're gonna take a break so we can say hi to Scott. And then
hello, Scott.
When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the Audio Nowcast 7 years, what has happened and some of the changes that have happened in that time, as well as talk about the fantastic giveaways that we're doing. So we'll see you on the other side.
Yeehaw.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking about basically, if you're a good engineer, you will sit there and shut up. But actually, we had a really great discussion during the break, like we always do. And
ordering lunch.
No, but talking about, you know, whether you're a musician or whether you're an engineer, that, you know, attitude keeps you employed. I mean, Bobby, you said a great thing. What was the thing you said about all the unemployed? It's amazing.
Oh, that there are so many brilliant engineers, producers, musicians that are out of work because people can't get along with them.
And that, you know, that right there would be a reason not to be an idiot. You know, it's going to affect your bottom line. Well, hey, listen, guys. We started this podcast in 2006, and I'll just give a really quick backstory. I've done it a couple of times in the podcast.
Yeah, we all had hair at that point.
No, you was bald then.
But back in 2006, I started a place, West Wave Audio, and I was thinking of a way to try to promote West Wave Audio. And I was going to be an API dealer, and I was thinking I was going to have all this time, you know, and to do all this stuff. And I thought, how can I just promote it and yet do something fun? And for the longest time, I would hook up with Rob and Scott, I think, came one time, and Larry Dropa, and we would meet every year at the NAMM show. We would our tradition was Sunday night, we'd go out to eat, and that's when we would all get together. And so when we get together, you know, at the NAMM show, it would always turn into a gear fest. It would always turn. We'd be talking about the biz and we'd be talking about stuff. And I thought, you know, this would be really cool. If you just get a bunch of working professionals sitting around a table and just letting them talk some of the same discussions that we've had, you know, over the years.
You should do that.
Over it. over at the NAMM show. I mean, you know what? It's the exact same way. You know, it's still filled with a lot of laughter. And the crazy thing is we still do that. You know, we still get together at the NAMM show. But that's how it started. I called Rob up and I said, hey, Rob, I'm thinking about doing a podcast. And, you know, Rob was like, yeah, it sounds like a great idea. I think I can get Scott, you know. And Rob asked Scott. And then I asked Martin. And then we had just
– And Bobby just showed up.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're still trying to figure out.
I was cleaning it up.
Unfortunately, he was my guest. You know? I think I brought Bob along. Yeah. I went, you've regretted it ever since.
No. I just barely had met you.
Yeah.
And you said, hey, come do this podcast with us. And you did the podcast. And that was back in 2006. And let me just tell you something. You know, there's a lot of great things about our podcast, but the best thing about our podcast is that was back in 2006. Ladies and gentlemen, every single one of those original people that were at the 2006 podcast are here right now.
Wow. This is the main crew, though, isn't
right.
it? I mean, I've seen other people pop in and everything, but this is the main
team. And we've added more people. You know, Andrew Sheps comes in. You know, we have Brandon, you know, Forrest.
But we are still the main serious
team. You guys are
team,
still
what are you saying?
Main.
We are more we important are. Than you.
Well, we're the first 11.
You know what? We added Diego. We added a bunch of different people because not everybody could make every podcast except Rob.
But we're still the main team,
yes,
aren't we?
Yes,
we're
you
still
are.
The best. He needs to hear that, Mike. You got to say it out loud.
This is the main team. But, you know, we've added a lot of flavors. And, you know, I just think it's pretty remarkable. I've gotten some come. Really amazing
that we're still alive, really. This is the key.
But I've got some really good emails because I posted that we were going to do our 7-year anniversary. And, you know, people were saying some really good things about us. And a couple things was, number one, that, you know, all the guys are here. But not only do we have all the original guys here, but I think our podcast, one of the great things about our podcast is the fact that all the guys that are on the podcast are AAA guys. They're all working and surviving in the industry.
Which
and,
podcast? And this one?
Are you sure?
He didn't say 5-star. We're only a triple. So we still got, you know.
We got to keep going.
AAA,
you know, he's trying to push us on.
You sure you don't mean 2A?
Yeah, let me take that one back.
We're all in AA.
Yeah, right. No, but no, it's really true. I mean, and I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to point that out and definitely you know, I really think all you guys are just
it's getting
really
very emotional
great
now.
At what
and
you what you're at?
Shed a tear.
Some strings overdub coming on.
No, but no, that's one of the really cool things, and the fact that you know we're out there working in the industry, and mainly I'm saying this to apologize for our website. I get people all the time saying, hey, why don't you try something? And every once in a while I'll change the thing. But
guys, you know, it's done so well for 7 years.
That's the thing.
Why should we change it 7 years ago?
Let me tell you about our little podcast, okay? We do no, absolutely zero promotion. I do not have the time to do that. I barely have the time to do the podcast and – what's amazing is we've only done 4 podcasts this year, okay? We have 15,000 downloads on those 4 podcasts. I mean, that's phenomenal.
So you mean 2 people keep downloading 7,500 times?
No, but it's just, you know.
I think Mike does that. He goes, I better do this.
Wait, we're only at 700. I get all my computers online. Okay, everybody download now.
Pretty substantial.
But that's pretty substantial. And I think one of the reasons that, you know, people connect with us is because we are working but that's also one of the reasons why
very silly.
You know, we don't have, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we've tried on this podcast. I've tried 2 times to do a video segment on this. The first time, I couldn't edit it. Didn't have enough time. The second time, the person who was going to co-produce, we actually went out. I shot 2 episodes. Went out and shot it, but the director – well, not the director, the editor who was going to edit it for me bailed at the last second. So
I remember very well the show we did at Rob's house was great. Well,
that was a good
that was
I
our
there.
50th
– was
or was that 1 year?
That was a 1-year anniversary.
That was very bonding.
That was 1 year. Yeah. Here's a couple facts.
That's right.
There are 2 lost shows out there that we recorded and never got posted.
Wow.
One of them was
– I like the we in that statement. You notice that?
One of them – come on. We'll be honest. We did it over at Bobby's house.
Oh, that was exactly what happened.
That was a great show.
But you know what?
It was a shame.
That's the curse of Rob because Rob couldn't be at that one.
That's right. Yeah, that would have been the first one I missed.
Right?
Yeah.
That would have been the first one. And it didn't happen because –
because engineer Bob here decided to choose – I set up 3 mics, right? No, right? Is that what I did? And I said, I'll do this. I'll just do this here. I stuck it into the new window, but I stuck
mic number one into three tracks instead of. And I turned around and said, "Ah, it's good enough. All right, ready."
So there is a recording.
There's a recording of
just of Mike speaking, right?
Well, yeah, there's like these three, like we have multiple mics here, but like if this mic was just recording and not yours, then we would hear you talk, but you'd be off.
This is a bootleg. You know, this is a boot. We're going to see this amoeba in about a week's time. Yeah,
we have two shows that were the last one.
So what about the second one?
The second one was a show that we did. I don't know when we did it. It was a couple years ago, but it just wasn't good.
we did have one that was a real stinker.
Yeah, it wasn't really good. And you know what happened? I know exactly what happened.
I wasn't here. That's why.
No, I wasn't there.
We only got. Like nobody showed up, and the guests bailed, and
that'd be tough.
So it was really hard. Rob was here, and I think that was it, you know. And I think there was a couple. It was not very good. It wasn't a good one, and I just didn't want to put it out. It just didn't go.
Keep the quality up.
Keep the quality like. At least even.
Reasonable. Reasonable.
It doesn't have to be good. It just has to be as good as all the other ones.
Which is a low standard in general. Generally, yes. Pretty easy.
But that was one of the things. There's two shows out there, so I wanted to let people know that that's a little bit of trivia. The other thing I wanted to point out about the podcast is we started in 2006, right? Do you realize some of the stuff that wasn't around in 2006 that's around now? For instance, we actually started a year before the iPhone. As a matter of fact, on one of our early shows, I talk about getting my iPhone for the first time. And we actually go into speculation about the phone and about how it's going to implement, you know, I mean, how it's going to impact technology and everything like that. One of the great things about our podcast, if you ever get the opportunity to listen from the front and go all the way to today, you will hear all the relevant technology changes that we talk about. And it was pretty fun when I was doing the research for this, because we talk about things about Facebook coming in, and we talk about the iPad, and we talk about, you know, all kinds of stuff that, you know, as it's happening, you know, this is stuff that's affecting the industry, and it was affecting all of us. When we started, you could still go to a record store.
So we're a vocal Wikipedia of history.
Really?
It's very true.
Yeah. We could, at the very beginning, we start talking about music. And on one of our early podcasts, I actually talk about my first experience with iTunes and with buying downloaded music and things like that. We talk about, you know, where it's going. Yeah. And it's pretty phenomenal that a lot of this stuff is – you know, unfortunately,
I think that's
true.
A really good point. Now, if all of us went back and listened to the first show, I think it would be really an eye opener on where we were at that point. You know,
so we should do a tradition every year at the end of the year. We should make a prediction, and then the following year we should listen to our prediction and see how much we got it right or wrong.
It's not a bad idea.
No,
that is not a bad idea.
And Southampton will
play
win
it
the
back
FA
for
Cup.
Ourselves and listen to it and go, wow, were we right? Or, wow, not even close.
See, in 7 years, Bobby gets a good joke and Scott gets a good idea.
It's not bad, we can leave now.
But really, it's a great little time capsule. That's what's really kind of cool is we talk about Pro Tools and, you know, HD3 and the Intels and the Macs and things like that. I think that's phenomenal, and it's really – you know, it's really one of the cool things about our podcast is that you can definitely see the change of technology. For instance, in 2006, you know, the Wii came out, and in 2006, the PS3 came out. I mean, there's some pretty significant, you know, technologies that came out. We were around before Facebook, and then we start talking about Facebook. As a matter of fact, when we first started doing the show, I was putting up.
And everything was MySpace at that time.
MySpace
was big, but I was putting up WMV files for the people that, you know, that weren't downloading MP3s. And we had a slew of people that weren't doing the MP3s. They were doing the Windows media files. Yeah. And now it's, you know, it's all, you know, MP3s and stuff like that. It's amazing how some of the changes. I mean, look at just some of the giant industries like apps, billion-dollar industries like the app industry, and look at phones and what the phone has become. You know, back in 2006, you were just barely starting to do video on your phones and stuff.
Bobby,
like
were
that.
You looking at sluts.com?
Yes.
7 years ago, you still?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
The good thing back then, though, is I could see them. Now I can't.
Now they're just on sluts.
Yeah, exactly.
He's wearing glasses now.
So I just get scratch and sniff these days.
I'll tell you something else about 2006. Do you know 2006 was the last year that they released VHS? The last VHS movies.
I'm still watching them.
Maybe
that's
Beta's
going to
come
thing.
Back. Is there a chance Beta's going to take off?
Well, the thing is, we're on the precipice now that desktop computers will probably go away.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because you just don't need them anymore.
Yeah.
Now with Thunderbolt and everything else, and not only that, but most people are using it on their mini, whether it's iPhones or mini iPads or
I think what's interesting Androids. Is what, 7 years ago, the cassette was over, wasn't it? Was it? We were thinking that the cassettes had gone in a way.
Well, they were definitely.
And CDs are almost gone now.
Yeah. But now cassettes are back to a certain degree. I mean, if you go into Amoeba, you'll just see a whole wall of cassettes being.
Like a vinyl revival, it's a cassette.
Absolutely.
Revival.
There are record labels that do nothing but cassettes. Yeah. Cassette releases.
So there's been a reverse that way.
Why?
And vinyl. And if you think about it, vinyl is back
up. I kind of miss the wow and flutter.
True.
I kind of miss when you hit the reverse button. It sounds really great on one hand, and then the other side sounds like this.
That means everyone's going to have to get a number two pencil so you can wind the little cassettes.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, let me tell you a couple other things really quick as we're looking back at when we started. Back in 2006, you could buy the Final Cut Pro Suite for $1,000. And now, you know, that stuff has come down to hundreds.
Now, when we started, what was the largest hard drive you can buy?
Good question.
Oh, that's a good question.
That's something, you know, like...
Well, I'll tell you, the fastest computer on the media side was...
Isn't it like the Jazz drive? Was that considered a huge? Like the 1 gigabyte?
Well, no, it already died by then. Jazz had died by then.
So 9 gigs was huge.
Back
wasn't
then?
It?
Like 50 gigs, probably.
50 gigs, yeah.
50
like.
Gigs?
Well, I'll tell you what. We had my first drives that I bought for the Audio Nowcast to record on... were 250 gigs. They were like the biggest drives at that time. They were Rockstar drives, which are still working fine today. Yeah. Knock on wood, but those were actually really awesome drives. So 250, you know, I don't know if they weren't floating the 500s or the 1 terabytes, but I spent a ton of dough on those 250s. And as a matter of fact,
my phone has more.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing I want to say: the big computer at the day, which was still PowerPC because they hadn't even introduced the Intels yet, were the 2.5, the dual processors 2.5s. And I remember I bought my first...
Flat screens didn't exist.
Right. I thought, no. Sure,
they started.
They exist because I bought my... Because the Pro Tools system, I think our first Pro Tools system that we did, you know, all together was like...
Oh, you're right.
It was like 20 grand for Pro Tools HD3 rig that 7 years later is just...
Rubbish.
Not rubbish, but it's not, you know, you're not going to be able to run anything on it. You know, we've come a long way. There's a lot of things that we're...
But is it better?
No, it's absolutely not.
You know, that's one of the things I wanted to open up.
Probably yes and no.
And I wanted to, you know what? I wanted to kind of ask each one of you guys is, you know, look back the past 7 years in your career and look back in what you've done musically.
Great silence. <Yeah. laughs>
What have you done in the last 7 years?
Sorry. Nothing much. We're doing this podcast, really.
Went very quiet for a while.
Professional podcast.
Really quick. I'll start with you, Pagey Boy. I want you to name one thing that you're really glad that we have nowadays, technology.
That's really easy.
And then I want you to name a technology that you kind of miss.
Oh, well, what I do love, and I think is taken for granted, is that everything on my Pro Tools is automated, and I'm in a living room, and everything I record on the day before, I can come back with and listen to the way it was the night before. Now, I remember, you know, so many years of having to mark off the board with a piece of tape and say, I've got to stay on this song for a week, and just jumping between songs, that's still a revolution to me. So I love that. I love that I'm... Because all through the 80s, I was thinking automation was the most wonderful thing. What do I miss? That's a I would say I miss still the thud of analog tape, the actual natural compression of guitars, particularly bass and drums hitting, the sound of analog tape. That's my two things. I love automation on Pro Tools for a cheap price, and you're able to listen to your mixes. And I, what's great is your rough mixes are always could be your master, which I never was able really to obtain a lot with analog. But I do miss the sound of instruments hitting tape.
Bobby, what about you?
What do I miss first? Or I tell you what's changed for me over those period of time, and some of it I miss, is I've gone more in the box, as a lot of people have done. But on the good side of that is a lot of the virtual synthesizers and the UAD type of plugins, and I use UAD, for example, the modeling's gotten much, much better. Ultraverb and lots of other in-the-box products that weren't great then, back 7 years ago, rather, weren't really, really great. But now they're much more believable. They're not... They don't replace, but they're much, much more believable. So I suppose that's the pros and cons. What I miss, I suppose, is that I am in the box. Silly thing I did about two months ago, I had to do reproduce a track that I did a long time ago, and I had a drum box that I used, and I couldn't remember what I used. Anyway, it was an R8M, and so I went and dug it out. I've kept all my stuff, so I went and dug it out, and I didn't particularly like the sound of the R8M then. And I still really don't now, but I plugged the thing in and I just played it. And I thought, wow, it sounded so much different than samples coming off the computer through my, you know, the hard drive and the VST sort of technology. And I just thought, wow, I do miss having, I had a much more of an outboard rack of samplers and MIDI cables and audio going in and out. And they had a bit more character. They had a bit more character and a bit more wobble, in as much as they're a bit more... And you didn't know exactly what you're going to get from them all the time. That's, yeah.
Scott, what about you?
You know, it's a two-sided coin. Sometimes it's the same coin. I love having instant access to so many things, whether, again, plugins, sound communication. I can communicate with my clients quickly. I can go to dubbing stages, and I can have somebody in New York, London, or L.A. shoot me a little something and get it within 5 minutes and have access to that kind of information. I can do 1,000 tracks now, totally automate it. It's no big deal. It's, you know, I think what I miss is silence. I find that I feel like I'm connected 24/7 to my gear, my clients, to everything else, that sometimes it's nice to just... When we didn't have all the technology, you weren't as connected, and there was something nice about the silence. And now, because you're always connected, you know, how often do you keep checking your phone? Do you keep checking online? And now it's multiple times an hour, not multiple times a day.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's nice to be connected, and sometimes it's really nice not to be connected.
That's true. Bobby O.
Technologically speaking, I miss nothing. I'm not one for looking back at all. I like to live today, and I want to deal with whatever I have today. Musically, one of the things I do miss is, especially with younger musicians, is the fact that the whole thought process of being able to replace sounds, being able to cut and paste, being able to pitch correct, things like that. I miss the fact that people sometimes don't want to do the work to get the best performance and would prefer to use the technology to get a reasonable facsimile. So that's something I do miss.
Rob.
You think,
I'm going to learn your name. Yes.
Yeah, one of these years.
It's nice to not see him on an iPad.
I know.
That would have been luxury.
Is it an iPhone? Or is it Apple? Yeah, really.
Well, compared to 7 years ago, I would agree with Scott. I love how much more connected we are. How interchange, I mean, we used to be FedExing tapes around and we'd have to get mixes done to make it to FedEx by 6 o'clock. And, you know, there were times when I'd be finishing up, you know, mastering something and Gary, the engineer, would be waiting out in the car, and I'd run out with the tape, and you know, we'd race to the FedEx office and be pounding on the window as they're locking the door. You know, I love that all the deliveries become electronic and the interchange, all kinds of interchanges become easier, not necessarily because the tools have gotten great, but everybody's figured out how to deal with them. Even, you know, going between different MIDI sequencers and Pro Tools and stuff, people are just used to rendering files and, you know, excuse me, you know, the whole workflow has just gotten easier, and then the internet has just made interchange through things like Dropbox and all the different ways to share online. It's just gotten way easier. What I miss from 7 years ago is what I miss from even longer before that, and that's just as the process gets easier, it makes it possible for people who have no business in the business to be making audio. You know, there's a lot of there's a lot of noise out there, a lot of people who haven't learned their craft, who are able to get some product made because it's just not that hard to get a product made anymore. But it's why there's so much more stuff to weed through to find the gems. And, you know, this was already well underway 7 years ago. This isn't that recent of a problem. But when I look back, that's usually what I think. As the process has gotten easier, you know, it's great for people who are just hobbyists and want to get, you know, want to have a good time. And it's great that it's opened up to everybody. But I don't think, you know, you look back at when the greatest songs were written and the songs that everybody acknowledges are the greatest songs, including kids who were born 30 years after those or 40 years after those songs were written. There's a reason that the best songs are from the beginning of, you know, this era, like 60s or 70s. You know, if you're talking about pop songs, because it was very hard to get something produced back then. You had to rise above everybody else. And now the playing field's completely level, and I don't necessarily think that's a great thing. I mean, I always assumed the really talented ones, you know, in each generation, there are going to be a small handful of people who really are that much better than everybody else. I like to believe they're still going to get heard, but I can't say that for sure.
I think there's something I can add to this for myself is that because technology's got so advanced, you sometimes move at a pace that doesn't allow you to stop. And as Scott said, you have that silence to look back and go, ah, well, I got time to think. And in the old days, the technology made you stop for a while and you had time to review and to take it in. Because we got this luxury now moving at such a pace where sometimes the work isn't great. And the old technology, you know, when you take the tape off the reel, you're thinking about the song.
Right.
And, you know, instead of just mass editing, you had this kind of thing where you had to sit back with the artist and listen to what you were doing. And as a writer, I found that more useful than just turning out at high speed lots of stuff, you know. So I think time is one thing, reviewing the work you're doing. We tend to have lost a lot of that with the technology.
I also think what you were saying is, I think also there's many metaphors, kids at a, you know, candy store, where all of a sudden you get a little kid and say, as much as you want, as fast as you want, go at it. So what happens is the kid comes in, stuffs his mouth with as much, it doesn't matter what it is, it's just sweet. Well, then the stomach gets very full.
Sure.
And then you kind of get sick of it because it's just, there's nothing, there's no definition.
Right.
So I think with music, we've had so much access to so much stuff at Kids in the Candy Store that we've grabbed it all. And some of it's not very good, but doesn't really matter because it was free, it was available, it was great. Now that we've kind of filled our stomachs, I think now it's starting to mature where people don't want everything and don't want anything. And I think that maybe I'm optimistic that we might be starting to turn a corner in our entertainment. Because it used to be entertainment on demand was something new and was cool and exciting and just to do it. And now we're like, I don't know if I like that. So I'm even seeing, even like in the film side, you look at HBO and Showtime. Some of the stuff that's happening in that level, some of the highest writing and acting in that medium, because all of a sudden it's all about the quality, and the big networks that have just been pumping out a lot of it schlock, nobody has any time for.
Yeah.
And so the sophistication with entertainment, I think, is getting higher. Movies, they put out crap. They don't do well in the box office. They die. Now all of a sudden, the movies have to get better. Showtime and HBO.
getting better. Right. The days where you had to apply yourself to 12-year-old mentality is gone. Now people want sophistication, and I think they're used to it. And when they don't get it, they don't like it. And I think that's permeating also into music and all the entertainment mediums.
I think what Rob said about a lot of the younger artists are looking back at classic songs and classic performances, classic recordings. Yeah. I mean, you can have so much of just being overdosed, as you said, in the candy store, and after a while, it changes. You go, we've had that. We've had a bad era. And then you start looking back and going, hey, some of the stuff back then. And
it's like disco, you know?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's, again, I keep on saying Amoeba, but you walk in and you see the young kids that are, you know, really going through the vinyl. Right. And they're 20, 19 years old and still looking for classic recordings. And I think that's a reaction to a pretty bad period we've been through.
But, you know, on feed on what both of you guys said, my answer to the questions on what, you know, I miss about the old times and what excites me about today is really it's the same thing. And that to me is opportunities. I think one thing that I miss about back in the day, and not so much for me, but I think for the next generation, is the opportunities to work your way up in the industry. It's just not the same way anymore. You know, you used to say, well, you know, go be an intern at a studio. Well, there's not a lot of studios around. You know, you used to, you know, the place to go to achieve some of those really great experiences that we've all had, you know, it's not the same way. Touring today is not like it was years ago.
That's why I
answer both ways, because back in the day, you know, I learned a lot from having to take care of a mega MIDI system like Stevie system, where we would roll out, you know, 12 cases for 12 racks for the keyboards alone, you know, and you had to really know your stuff and be organized. And those are the type of, you know, troubleshooting, you know, all those kind of things that you can learn in a situation like that. Having said that, you know, about the opportunities, you know, one of the great things about today is the opportunities. They're different, like you said, Bobby. I mean, now you have the YouTubes, now you have, you know, independent, you have more independent production than you've ever had. I mean, everybody with a, you know, with a DSLR is a filmmaker. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities out there if you want to, you know, pursue your chops as a post-production mixer. You know, it's not quite the same, I don't think the road's going to, you know, I don't know what the defined road is right now. There's so many recording, you know, schools, you know, training out so many interns, I mean, Scott, you must get a gazillion resumes, you know, and everybody wants to do it. And there's this competition. So
Bobby only takes females, right?
Preferably, yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot.
But I'll take anything.
There's a lot of things there's a lot of opportunities. So it's kind of like, it's just this really weird time. I'd be curious to see the next generation of Audio Nowcast people sitting around, how they talk about their journey to being where they're at, you know, because there's going to be guys at that. There's guys that are going to be working in the industry, and 20 years from now, they've done their 20 years and they've done their 25 years or 30 years. I'd like to know what their journey is, you know, because their journey is going to be different than my journey. My journey is starting off, you know, touring, live sound, working up through sound production, going into editing, you know, going a little bit of film school and then working post-production, boom, and then doing music and stuff like that. But what's their journey? They started off in one, you know, viral video that hit it big, and then, you know what I'm saying? And somebody asked them to do this web series, and then I don't know what that is. So it's going to be really cool.
The other thing is, it seems like there's always been, and I'm grossly generalizing, but there's always been two types of music. There's music that the business of music wants you to listen to. They're going to sell it, and this is something that's pop music. It's popular. It's a product they're creating. And then in every generation, there's indie music. There was punk music. There was all the different music that comes from not necessarily an establishment, but something that's come
from the street.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what's interesting, I think, that with our access to instant information, that the indie market is incredibly interesting. So you look at the potentials for some, like look at Frank Zappa in the early days and bands that were not considered mainstream. They would never get played on the radio, and how do they fit in, and how does that work? All of a sudden, you know, if a performer wants to be there both musically and visually, there's a lot of amazing things that they could do to become celebrity, per se. So all of a sudden they get a big following via YouTube or something, a word of mouth, all of a sudden it goes viral, and if it's hopefully good and has some lasting, all of a sudden...
Gangnam Style.
Yeah, we know. I mean, but yeah, I mean, that's it's ridiculous. My son loves it. And
I love it too. I think it's a great track.
But again, it's somebody who didn't know somebody, wasn't connected. There wasn't some executive that said, you're going to make it, you're not.
That's actually not true. On Gangnam Style, there's a big backstory on that.
A strategy?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Psy actually came from big money in South Korea. His father, actually his family, owns a microchip factory. And actually, as soon as the record came out and started to go viral worldwide, their stock doubled.
Yeah, but
but that being said...
They're not dumb people.
No, but that being said...
But that wasn't a record company saying...
No, there was. There was a big strategy behind it.
Yeah, that wasn't his first album or anything.
And they pushed it behind the scenes to get to the viral point.
There are others.
Well, you know what? I don't mean to cut you off, but... Well, go ahead, I'll let you finish.
No, I actually was.
See, over 7 years, we've gotten a lot more polite. But all this to say is it's going to be really exciting to see where this next 10, next 20
will
years
we are. Be here well, in 7 you know, years?
Tom. Absolutely. Knock on wood. But hey, listen, we got to wrap this up. But before we go, I need to thank a couple people. And by the way, back in 2006, that's when Google actually bought YouTube. So that happened back then. First of all, I want to thank some of the people that have helped us along the way. And, you know, Ken Kane.
I saw him the other day.
We saw him.
He was really helpful in like years like 2 through 5-ish, 4-ish, you know. And then everybody remembers April. April was really great when she helped us. It's always good to have, you know.
How is she doing? What's she doing?
She got married. She has a kid. She's really.
YouTube over YouTube. You know.
And also, you know, I got to thank Vanessa. She helped us on our MySpace. She would help us with anything, but really there's not a whole lot for her to do right now. But she helped us at the very beginning. And actually, I met Vanessa just by her sending in an email just saying that we had a really cool podcast. And then Vanessa has turned into a totally integrated part of not only the Audio Nowcast, but also Martin's team and what we do over there. And, you know, she's just really awesome. And I got to thank her. And then I have to say a huge thank you to Jeremy.
Jeremy came in,
and he's really taking control of the.
You hear him yelling from the other room.
Yeah, Jeremy, you can put yourself in on the edit right there. but Jeremy, he was phenomenal. Jeremy,
he's listening, man. That's a good sign.
He wrote me an email and said, "Hey, I just want to come by and just bring you guys coffee and just hang out at a podcast." And I said, sure, come on in. Come, you know, you don't have to bring the coffee, but you could join
Whiskey
us on the podcast.
Would help, yeah.
Can you work for free?
Well, Jeremy was sitting there, and
I think you told that same joke the first time I was at the podcast.
At least I'm consistent.
So then he came and he sat in on a podcast, and then we talked afterwards, and I said, Jeremy, you want to help out? And he said, yeah. And basically, he's been started off doing the recording, and then he's really taken over the editing, which was a huge burden off my shoulders. And so I can't thank Jeremy enough. And the cool thing about Jeremy is he's kind of that new generation. He's making his own way. What did he do? He sent an email out to a podcast, and then once we started working, I was giving him some freelance jobs to help him you know, basically support, and he had some other work, and then he's kind of worked up, and now he's, you know, working in a big place and working his way up there. And so it's just, you know,
he deserves it too. He's a good kid.
Jeremy, yeah, like I said, I can't thank you enough. We've had some really
good – I think you've thanked him enough.
Too much, in fact. Stop it.
We've had some really great success stories on some people that have even joined us. One of them is my friend Brett Johns, who came in way back on one of the early shows, and he just wanted to start getting into sound design. He was just wanting to start to do that. And he was, you know, he was a waiter before, and he wanted to get into sound design. And so he came on the podcast, and we were starting talking, and I've talked to him. And he's kind of weaved his way in and around certain things, and he's made little mistakes here, but he's corrected himself. And now he's a great sound designer. I've heard his stuff, and he's on a AAA title we can't talk about, but he's like, you know, the man doing the sound design there. And it's just like, you know, you can still make it. There's ways for you to do that career path to be part of the Audio Nowcast. We need to thank all the guys that have been on it and, you know, been a panel member. And let me tell you, I got to thank you guys here because you guys add so much to the podcast. You're all superstars, like I said before. It's not easy to be on this, on the panel. You know, I've had guys who've wanted to be on the panel, and not that I've turned them down. I just said, oh, that's a good idea. But really, you know, I feel, you know, it's just, you know, we have a tremendous just the diversity of the people that we have. Yeah. We've got, you know, Bobby O and your writing, and Bobby and your just technical engineering, and Martin and his songwriting, and Rob and his engineering skills and songwriting and software skills, and Scott and your sound design, you know.
We should stop here because we should say our leader, which is you. You're talking about everybody else, Mike, but you've been so consistent, and you've had great motivation for this show, and you've stayed consistent. And also, every time you've come to the podcast, we've not really known what we're going to be doing, and you've always had great themes, and you've always had an eye to help people, the people out there, and that's really why we're here, is because of you.
Woo-hoo! That's why they're still listening.
And I would just add, though, you shouldn't wear that dress anymore.
But the pumps really work with his eyes.
Well, I appreciate it. And really, you know, the whole podcast exists for the listeners out there. And I just want to tell you guys, you know, we have some fantastic listeners. And you know, the guys that are active, you know, the Andrews and the Marks and the Jacks and the Johns and the Joes, you know, just we have some really good guys that have sent me some stuff, and even the ones that don't ever respond. I know you're out there. I know you're downloading. Our downloads are always up, and we're always getting more likes. You know, literally, we do no promotion, and we're, you know, 325, 3,000 downloads a show average. It's like, you know, it's pretty good. Fantastic. We have some great friends overseas. We've got, you know, we've got the Musos over there, the German podcast, and with Thomas Vent and that whole gang, and those guys are awesome. So it's really cool. I just want to thank everybody for listening, for always supporting us, and because you guys are awesome, we've got some amazing giveaways, and
we're giving Rob away.
Well, for one thing,
get rid of him.
For one thing, we're gonna do this. We're gonna give away. Well, actually, Bobby O is gonna give away one of his books, his newest edition, right, of the
third edition of the Mixing Engineer's Handbook.
Right, nice. And that's going to be signed by Bobby, and that's a great book, and Bobby's a great author, and to get a signed copy. I don't even have a signed copy, so that's pretty awesome.
Andrew Sheps is in this too.
Oh, that's Andrew. Right. Yeah. Andrew is another one who shows up and talks really deeply.
I mean, we should actually mention Andrew and Forrest and Diego and his and all the different people who been in and out over those years. I'm sure I'm forgetting many, but.
No, you pretty much got them all.
Oh, that was it? Okay.
No, well, also Bill Burgess.
I actually saw Bill last week, and he said hi to everybody.
Oh, he's great. Yeah. Bill was,
he's
Bill
still
was
using Logic, but he's fine otherwise.
I firmly believe that. Rob, you actually made a move because of his fact that he liked Logic and you didn't. And
you got to be strict about these things.
So we've got Bobby's book, and then Right now we have a special message from somebody who wants to make an announcement. So let's roll that right now.
Well, hello, Audio Nowcast podcasters. This is Larry Dropa, president of API. I'm checking in to say congratulations to this wacky crew of, well, mostly audio professionals on 7 years of podcasting. API has been privileged to be associated with the podcast for many years, and you may remember I was one of the first guests on the podcasts. To help celebrate the 7-year anniversary, API will be giving away an API lunchbox and a 560 graphic EQ to a lucky listener of the show. How do you get in on the fun? Easy. Just send an email with your name, put API in the subject line, and send it off to audio@nowcastnetwork.com. We're going to draw one winner and send the lunchbox and the 560 graphic EQ to you. You'll probably end up feeling like a Powerball winner, but you know, I think your odds are better here. So, send your name, API in the subject line, and email it to audio@nowcastnetwork.com. You know, this podcast stays on the edge of what's cool, what's hip, and sometimes even what we should stay away from. Congratulations, you guys. Keep on podcasting. I love this show.
So you heard it, guys. API is giving away a lunchbox and a 560
wow.
EQ.
That's brilliant.
Wow. Now,
brilliant.
Listen, I'm going to tell you listeners out there,
yeah.
When we do giveaways, we don't get a lot of entries. So your odds of getting this are really, really good. If you send an
I'm
email.
I'm going to go for it.
What's the email address?
If you send in your email to audio@nowcastnetwork.com and then just put giveaways. And we're going to do a couple drawings. We'll do one for the lunchbox.
It'd be great if one of us won it. It would look fixed, wouldn't it?
And then you know what? If you in your email, I want you to put, you know, giveaway, that's it. That's all you have to do. Just
what
simple.
A giveaway.
We're going to put them all together. We're going to do the drawings. And we're going to give away Bobby Osinski's signed book. Mm-hmm. And we're also going to give away the 560.
Well, you have to read his book first so that you can use the gear.
And let me tell you, the 560 EQ is by far my favorite API EQ. I love it because it's a graphic. It's just so smooth. It's awesome on guitars, but you can really use it on anything where you just need to make a little bit of punch. And it's so musical. So it's a really – I mean, I was pretty shocked and API was very generous. And I want to thank API because they've been behind us the whole way. And the great thing about being sponsored by a company like API is – you don't have to say anything more, you know? And those guys, Larry and Gordon and the guys over at API, they are doing a phenomenal job. They acquired the company years ago, and they've really, you know, it's an American company, and they have a tremendous legacy, a tremendous history in recording. And, you know, they've done some amazing things. The history of that company from Jimmy Page's council that
When did they start? What was the date of
API? Well, they had their 40th anniversary a couple of years ago. They're like in probably year 43 or 44 by Saul Walker, who basically his background was electronics, did some stuff for the military, things like that. And so I can't thank API enough. They've always supported us. Larry's always been on whenever he's been here, and just they've been great, great support for the podcast. If it wasn't for them, we would not have a podcast. So they're you know, directly responsible for this thing. So guys,
you know what? I'll just say one other thing. When people write in to win these giveaways, put in your email. Just give us some feedback. Let us know what you'd like to hear in the next 7 years. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, all that stuff. You know,
absolutely.
We're giving away some cool toys. We may as well learn something from
feedback.
It.
Feedback.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, so do we do...
I mean, we can... It's going to be random drawing, right?
Or, right. It'll be random. But,
yeah, so...
You know, it'd be nice if it was random with some good stuff in it.
But, yeah, it'd be a shame if it was a random entry
but
that won.
But
if
money was included...
No, it'd be a drag if we pick one and their comment is, you guys suck, and they win.
And you wonder if that flipped them around.
That's a good point. Yeah,
we'll see. That's true.
And why you like the Audio Nowcast?
Well, we don't always get to respond to everybody, but we do like hearing from you, and we do like the feedback.
And really quick, let me just tell you, when we first started the Audio Nowcast, we could not give away a car for if you even tried. I mean, we couldn't give away anything.
Is that Mexican? No.
Oh, the DMP7s? Yeah. No, they're still intact in my garage.
We tried a DMP7 giveaway, and it just...
but when we tried to give it away, it was about 95 years old then, wasn't
it? Yeah.
Well, you know what? Our first successful giveaway was actually, I gave away a Roland drum machine, an old one that I had that... It was so bad, it's not even coming back around the second time. It was that orange one. I don't know if you guys – I don't even know what model it was. It was orange, and it had a little XY pad in the middle, was
– It was a Dr. – It was
It was a Roland. I forgot what it was.
Dr. Krebs?
Is that what it is? Yeah. Anyhow.
Doctor.
All that to say.
A horrible product name.
But you know what? We've gotten better.
Doctor Crap.
We've gotten better. We've given away t-shirts. We've given away books. You know, we've gotten better. And now
we should definitely have t-shirts. We should have the Audio Nowcast t-shirts.
All right. Yeah. Here's another piece of trivia. Uh-huh. There are Audio Nowcast t-shirts.
Wow.
I have both of them. yeah.
Make them to walk around the NAMM show?
No, or I made two because I was gonna do t-shirts, but that, you know what, that was back in the day when I also thought I was gonna do a video series, and then, you know, I mean,
you still might.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out how that all goes. But like I said, it's always been about working, and I've always found the responsibility to the people out there is just to, you know, I don't care what the website looks like. It's all minimalist, and we may not get on – you know, I was going to do a Twitter feed, Audio Nowcast Twitter feed, but I realized it was going to be a lot of things like, hey, guys, I'm working on this really great project, but I can't tell you what I'm doing.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Oh, this really good project now that I can't tell you what I'm doing? Yeah, I'm working on another one of those –
You know, Mike, this makes the show even more cool, you know, because we don't go full hog. It's just a very special kind of thing, you know?
We can't. But
yeah. There you go.
But anyhow.
In the future, I'm hoping we don't – we just say we're not even sure we can talk about whether we're working on something we can't talk about. Or I might be working on something I can't talk about.
Well, you know, rest assured, though, on the backside, there's some really cool stuff. And, you know, when I finish, like, the Toshiba commercial that I have, or when Scott finishes, you know, Pacific Rim, or, you know, Rob finishes his big projects with Google, and Martin's albums, and Bobby's books, and Bobby's songs. I mean, it all goes around. Yeah. You know, one of the best things about the podcast is we were talking about, speaking of Bobby before we go, is when you were the music director of...
That's right.
What was it called?
Master of Champions! Guys, that's a... I wish I could have taken a picture.
I tell you what's going to be a good show is when Bobby's Neve is up and going.
Oh, that's going to be
a celebration.
It.
Yeah.
We should. And here's the thing about Master of Champions. What was awesome was the image of our Bobby Summerfield directing the band up on the stage. And then... I remember because we were sitting behind him. I was with Martin. We were over there. We were sitting behind him.
And they were laughing their heads off. I kept turning around. They go, no!
But no, it was actually really cool because it was you, the stage.
Yeah.
I mean, you were in the back. And then looking through, you can see the stage and you can see all the acts and things like that. It was just a really cool vibe.
It was actually a good set. It was a big set.
Yeah. The set was awesome. It was really great.
The stripper was great.
Yeah, she was great. She was terrific.
Anyhow, I digress. Anyway, guys, we're wrapping it up. And once again, you know – I'm not going to go around and talk about, you know, what everybody's doing because...
Go on. Nothing.
You know, that's the only reason I came to talk about nothing. What I was doing.
What are you doing? Nothing.
Yeah.
Unless you guys are doing something...
That you can talk about.
Can't talk about nothing.
Because we're going really, really long. But once again, you know, what I will say is it's been an honor and a privilege. And if you have any comments or questions, like Rob said, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Send us an email if you want to enter in the drawings. Also, you can catch us on the Facebook page and, you know, post anything you want there. And that's probably a really great way to get to people immediately. We may not always write back, but we always read them. I always read everything. It's the communicating back that I'm really bad at. Mm-hmm. But we read everything. And you never know. If you send us a question in 6 months, we may tackle it. Like we did tonight. So, but once again, thank you guys for 7 years. Looking forward to the next 7 years.
Yeah. It's been a lot of fun, Mike. We've enjoyed this.
So for myself and all the guys and everybody that's ever helped out and just all friends and family that have been involved in the podcast, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses AFEX's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.